Justin, I have a question for you.
Yes, ma'am.
First of all, I just want to ask if I mean, first of all, we are not on Facebook Live yet, right?
Not at the moment.
Okay. And do you have it to where when that presentation of speakers or whenever there is that view of it, I know this is the first time you've done this board meeting. Will it be pinned just those who are speaking or are board, or do we see all, can you take away those who don't have there?
I will give a quick answer for you. I'm looking at a couple things.
Okay.
I don't know of a way to hide any participants, but the people that are speaking should bounce.
Okay. All right. Okay, just checking before we go live and there's not a way to change it.
Okay. Anybody that needs to make a presentation, I will make a co-host so that you have the screen sharing abilities. So far, Brenda Holt, I've made you a co-host. If anyone else needs to, please just drop it in the chat.
She should be the only one, Justin.
Okay, thank you, Brenda.
But.
All right, very good. Okay. All right. Okay, thank you, Justin. I think we are squared away. I did hear a lot of feedback with someone's mic earlier, and so I guess we'll kill that if we hear it again.
Okay. Are we ready to go live? I'm ready to hit the button.
All right, yes, please.
Okay.
All right, welcome, and we'll give everyone just a moment to get situated. Thank you very much for joining us today at this special board meeting. One moment. All right. Honorable board members, today is Monday, October the 12th. This is a special board meeting for the State Board of Education, and good morning, and I hope you are all doing well. Today's discussion and possible action stem from the recently released audit by State Auditor Cindy Bird regarding Epic Charter Schools and all related entities. As you know, Governor Stitt and I requested this audit in the summer of 2019. The findings are very significant and alarming. I want to make clear that today's discussion is narrowed to include only those matters related to the State Department of Education and matters within the purview of the State Board of Education. In just a few minutes, we will receive a presentation from the auditor's office by Ms. Brenda Holt of that office. And others who are here with her today perhaps may also be part of that presentation. And I'll allow Ms. Holt to make introductions in a moment. I also want to underscore that our focus relates on the operations of Epic Charter Schools and not its instruction for these discussions today. So with that said, at this time, I will ask that first we begin with a roll call. And Ms. Cheadle.
Carlisha Williams Bradley.
Here.
Kurt Bollenbach.
Here.
Bill Flanagan.
Here.
Estella Hernandez.
Here.
Jennifer Moniz.
Here.
Brian Bobeck.
Here.
Superintendent Hoffmeister.
Here. All right. And we have a quorum. Let me ask if we complied with the Open Meetings Act.
We did.
Thank you very much. Well, with that, we are on our item 3A, which is the presentation and discussion related to the special investigative audit of Epic Charter Schools conducted by Oklahoma State Auditor and Inspector Cindy Bird. With that, I will ask if we would now have that presentation from Ms. Holt. And please welcome and feel free to introduce those who are here with you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Yes, I'm Brenda Holt, the director on the Epic Audit. We also have in attendance Reiner Stachowicz, supervisor on the audit, and Celicia Wilkin, who's also a supervisor on the audit. They will be available if there's questions that they've specialized in that they can answer. I want to start out, I will also try to share my screen, so we will do that. We were initially requested to do this audit, as Superintendent said, from Governor Stitt. I was going to share. Can y'all see my screen? Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, okay. This is the letter of request from Governor Stitt that called our office into audit. I wanted to make it clear, it has been put out in some of the press, that we were only requested to look at a three-year look back at previously issued audits. I wanted this letter to be read that that was not the case. We were requested to do an audit of Epic Charter Schools and all related entities. The three-year look back was to be included, but was not the focus of the audit. So that was our initial request to do the audit. I also want to make the statement that this audit is not about charter schools. It's not about school choice. It's strictly reporting on the management of Epic School and related financial activity. Our office is not taking a stance of any kind or meaning to interpret anything in our work about the validity of charter schools. So I'm hoping that all of y'all have read the report or have a copy in front of you. It is 100 plus pages, so I don't believe that it would be timely to cover every page in the report. I will be going chapter by chapter and hitting the highlights. If you do have a question, feel free to interrupt me, or I will pause after some main issues and take questions as we go through. I think that would be more timely for the process. So we're going to start right out on chapter one, which was accountability and oversight. We tried to define exactly who Epic Charter Schools is accountable to. And looking at that, they're accountable to three entities. First of all, SDE, the State Department of Education, I'll be calling SDE. SDE awards their funding. They record and accept their OCAS financial reporting of revenues and expenditures. They do federal reviews, and they are also involved in the accreditation process. So that's the accountability with the State Department. They're also accountable to their charter sponsors. That's the Virtual Charter School Board and Rose State College. The Virtual Board oversees one-on-one. Rose State College oversees blended, two separate districts. The charter applications also are part of that application and over accountability process. The sponsors authorize and approve those charter contracts. The next board that they're accountable to is Community Strategies, their actual school board. That's the school district school board called Community Strategies. They have ultimate jurisdiction over the transactions of the district. They approve all the transactions, and their obligations cannot be assigned or delegated. They are the ultimate authority in those transactions. Community Strategies is the board for both districts, one-on-one and blended. They hold separate meetings as a separate board for those districts. Now, how does that go into the oversight? This chapter was over accountability and oversight. That's who they're accountable to and in the areas that they're accountable. The actual oversight is how those entities handled that accountability. The oversight, as we saw it, was weak. Yes, there were a lot of reviews and reports. It was actually mentioned that they had been audited. I think the term was 43 times in 36 months. those are not true audits, okay? Those were reviews. Those included reviews of flexible benefits, of special education, lots of education desktop reviews. They're actually only audited, a true audit, by their independent auditor. So oversight as a whole was weak. There was very little verification of the underlying documentation of EPIC. The support was taken as is without follow-up. The information was taken at face value. The breakdown of the virtual board and Rose State College and their oversight, Rose State College and their oversight of Blended admitted that they had done basically no oversight other than reviewing the independent audit. So there was no other thing to review on their side as to their oversight. The virtual board did have policies in place to define their oversight. They did some on-site reviewing, but they also heavily relied on outside reports of OEQA, the Office of Educational Quality and Accountability. They contracted with them and relied on their summary reports. And they also relied on the public auditor and SDE. Although they did have some good processes in place, it probably just was not enough as far as the in-depth review of the actual records and supporting information. And then the final accountability of the board itself. We've established they have oversight responsibility. They're the main responsible party. But we saw that they did not review any actual transactions and documentation. They didn't see purchase orders. They didn't see invoices. They don't look at bank statements. Most of their transactions, if not all, are reviewed on a consent agenda after the fact. They also only meet quarterly. Now, this is statutory allowed, so they're not meeting less than they should. The statutes do define at least 4 meetings a year. But in those 4 meetings, attendance was poor. One member only attended 56% of 4 meetings a year, so only 2 meetings a year on average. Another member only attended 31% of all the meetings in a 5-year period. So when you're only meeting 4 times a year and then you miss 2 or 3 of those meetings, the oversight is very poor. There was not one meeting in 5 years that all 5 board members attended. That, to us, is not appropriate oversight for this board. Any questions on accountability and oversight? Okay, we will move on to talk about OCAS, Oklahoma Cost Accounting System Reporting. OCAS is defined. Share my screen. Here's the statute. OCAS is, I don't know if you're seeing them. Yes? No? Yes.
Yes.
I apologize for my lack of technology wisdom. This is the statute that does require a charter school to comply with OCAS. They shall not be permitted, you'll see in the last line, to submit estimates of expenditures or prorated amounts. And the main thing we got from this statute is you'll see in the first highlighted sentence, they shall prepare a statement of actual income and expenditures. That is a term that we believe defines a lot of the issues that we saw at EPIC in their OCAS reporting, that they were not reporting actual, not necessarily in dollar amount. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about actually categorizing those costs as they should have been categorized. Our finding beginning with OCAS in 2016, we saw in their OCAS reporting for that year that EPIC inaccurately reclassified administrative costs totaling $2.9 million. This eliminated an administrative cost penalty of $2.6 million. The administrative costs are limited to 5% of total expenditures. So when that report was submitted on September 1 of 16, the initial OCAS report showed a $2.6 million overage, which means that money would have been withheld from the next appropriations made to the district. SDE attempted to communicate with EPIC to ask them, why is this an overage? What is the classification? Is this correct? There were multiple communications between October 3rd, when that first communication started between SDE and EPIC, and December 15th, when those reports are finally due and to be locked down. SDE directed OCAS to return the coding to the administrative category. They had changed that coding and SDE did not agree with that. Now, EPIC had reported this overage in a object code and function code of 2319.310. That is the code of administrative cost. Their explanation for the situation was they had previously coded this, and that code had always been accepted in the past. And that is true. They had used that for a few years and it had been officially accepted by SDE. From our discussions with SDE, that code should have never had been used. They had discovered it was being used inappropriately in the combination that it was. And so SDE put in edit checks to kick out the reports that use that combination of coding inappropriately. So when EPIC attempted to use the code again, even though they had used it in the past, it kicked out as an inappropriate administrative cost. So this was the argument from EPIC, but SDE continued to require them to leave the cost in that category. Coming on December 15th, the superintendent locked down the codes that had been changed now from the administrative category. They had removed all of the costs and now the administrative cost overage was zero. SDE chose not to accept those numbers and they did not lock down their OCAS submission on December 15th as required. Discussions then began that Superintendent Cheney at the time disagreed that they would have to return those to the initial category. There were discussions that they would like to do whatever SDE would want them to do to avoid a penalty. They offered up taking the approximate $3 million and dividing it into 10 categories equally. They offered that in a letter and said, anything we can do to avoid a penalty. This is where we also took exception because now we are estimating. We are not basing those codings on actual cost. And as you saw in the statute, OCAS should be based on actual cost and cannot be estimated. SDE did not continue to certify. The director of OCAS at the time attempted to get access to EPIC's records to verify. They asked for those records that were not provided. And after much discussion though, SDE in February of that year went forward and agreed to accept the OCAS report with the zero administrative cost. There was much discussion as to how that took place. It was actually never officially verified, but it was determined that the previous legal counsel gave the director of OCAS the command to lock those down and their zero administrative cost was accepted. So the summary of what happened in 2016 was the process resulted in the reclassification of $2.6 million with no penalty for EPIC. But again, the results were not actual and they were not correct. Any questions about this?
Ms. Holt, those underlying $2.6 million in charges, were those in fact administrative in nature or were they instructional or something else?
They basically were consisting of the management fee. I'm going to see if I can share my screen again. Yeah, I missed a couple. Here is the screen for management fees. If you'll see the 2016, the $3 million. Basically, those that were recoded were part of the management fee contract payments. We're going to get in and talking about that in a second. During this time, The management company, the charter management organization, which is Epic Youth Services, was not required to itemize their invoices. And we acknowledge that. That is true under the law at that time. But that, in our opinion, did not waive the school's responsibility to report their actual expenditures and not to estimate theirs. So it would have been on the school's responsibility to request that their charter management organization provide them actual expenditure breakdowns so they could properly report under the law. That is the stance that we are taking. If your management organization was not willing to do that or capable of doing that, then there is the issue that all of these should be administrative costs. Does that answer your question? I also wanted, I skipped this slide previously. In the lockdown by the administration, this was actually signed by Superintendent Cheney. It's signed by the superintendent annually when they submit the OCAS report. This is the certification and attestation that they are making. And if you can read this, it is, I hereby certify to the best of my knowledge and belief, the data reported constitutes an accurate and full report of revenues and expenditures. You can go on to read the rest. I am aware that any false, fictitious, or fraudulent information or the omission of any material fact may subject me to criminal, civil, or administrative penalties. So the locking down of that information is an attestation under oath that those informations are true and that reporting has been done correctly.
Brenda, this is Bill Flanagan. Did they lock down every year and make, yes, and sign that statement?
Yes, every year.
Another question is, do you have a work paper or a schedule that summarizes the detail of the $8.9 million?
Yes, absolutely. And we will talk about that here in just a minute. Okay. We'll move forward to the 8.9. It's a little bit of a different area, but the answer to that is yes, absolutely. Okay. After reviewing 2016, we also reviewed 17 through 19, and we had some of the same issues. We have the issue, of course, that management fees are being reported without itemized invoices, which causes the school not to have the detail they need to report actual revenues and expenditures. We move into fiscal year 2020. House Bill 1395 came out. That was a new bill that required the charter management organization to now itemize their invoices. That was to prevent what we had been dealing with in 16, 17, 18, and 19, is that the school was reporting basically costs that were estimated as to what those breakdowns should have been. This bill technical difficulties. Here is the actual statute reference for House Bill 1395, requiring that a charter school now contracts with an educational management organization must itemize expenditures, must be provided. So in fiscal year 2020, we were anticipating a compliance and breakdown of those management fee invoices. Here is an example of an actual management fee invoice. These were what was provided from Epic Youth Services to Blended and One-on-One. As you can see, the categories broke down. Those are the categories that were newly established in OCAS by STE for the reporting of management organization contracts. So that is an appropriate breakdown. The issue came in when you can see, and I blew it up greater, and this is the annual reporting for One-on-One and Blended. As you can see, again, we're dealing with estimates. These categories were taken and divided by identical percentages for each school district. We still took exception that in fiscal year 2020, the school was not reporting actual expenditures because they were not receiving actual invoice breakdowns. When you have identical month-to-month invoices that total your management fee. So while the statute was put in place to solve that issue, this is the alternative that EYS and Epic accepted these invoices for their payment. Any questions on that? So in summary,
just,
I think
Ms. Holt, just for clarification, that document is just between Epic Public Schools and EYS. That is not an acceptance between SDE and Epic Public Schools. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is just the management organization of EYS invoicing the school, Epic Blended and Epic 101.
Thank you.
Yes. Now we will go into talking about OCAS payroll. Mr. Flanagan brought that up previously. We did have a finding in the report that reflected that administrative payroll costs had been underreported $8.9 million. That is a document, as Mr. Flanagan asked. We do have a detailed worksheet that lists all of the individuals that make up that dollar amount. We took each individual, we took the head count of the school, their classifications as to whether people were administration or teachers or support. We took their classification of administration and then we evaluated, I think it was around 240 to 250 employees. And we took from their titles, we looked at their job descriptions, we looked at their job duties, we looked at the accreditation reports as to how they were reported and whether they had students or did not have students. We also looked at their titles. As you can see in statute, on the screen, this is the statute that defines administrative service costs. As you can see, it does specifically list the individuals and the positions, and it's very specific that any superintendent, elementary, or assistant superintendent, the school did have several assistant superintendents that were not classified as administrative costs. It also lists that any employee of a school district that's employed as a director, coordinator, or supervisor also would be classified as administrative costs. We did take into account, initially we started that if you had that title, you were administrative cost. But we did take into account these individuals' positions, their job duties, whether they had students or not. Sometimes these titles were given, as the school communicated to us, that the titles were given just to give the employees a positive feeling about their job titles and how much they were appreciated. And we understand that. But under statute, that would not necessarily be an allowable exception. We did try to take that into consideration, and we did not classify everyone that had these titles as administrative payroll. Even giving all those evaluations consideration, we still had 8.9 million of payroll individuals that should have been reported as administrative costs that were not, okay?
Ms. Holt, if you're going by the statute and anyone with a title that ties back to administrative in nature, under the statute, is there an additional amount then that would have been tacked on to that 8.9 million? And if so, can you tell us what that dollar figure is?
I can answer yes, there would be. I hesitate at the moment. I don't know, Celicia, if you would be able to come up with a dollar amount. I hate to estimate too much, but there are multiple employees that we, let me back up here. There were some employees that we were giving credit or grace to the school for not reporting as administrative. And then it came down in fiscal year 19 that the school actually reported some of these individuals as administrative themselves in 2019. Individuals that they had been arguing with us should not have been reported. So when we discovered that issue, we did go back and add some of the individuals based on their titles. Celicia, is there any estimate you can make on that amount that if we had classified everyone, or should we get back with them on that if necessary?
I think we should get back with them on that number, but I would say that there would be a significant number of people that would be added back in, because I believe there were 274 employees that were classified as administration by the district. We ended up with approximately 75 that we felt met the criteria. So as you can see, there was a large number of people that we would have to reevaluate based on title alone.
Yeah, I would be interested in knowing if the statute is followed verbatim. If someone has a certain title, they are classified as the statute requires. I would like to know how many people that is, and also what the dollar figure would be.
Okay, we will get that to you soon.
Thank you.
Yes. I do want to say too that OCAS coding is very subjective. We understand that. And that's why we chose in our detailed analysis, the OCAS reporting, to choose payroll. Because in our opinion, payroll is not as subjective as the other reporting of finances. Payroll is very defined, as you can see here in statute. Job descriptions are very defined. Whether someone supervises or have students is very defined. So that's why we chose payroll to be our in-depth study of OCAS reporting. While we were looking at the payroll reporting, we also came to light the inaccuracies in the accreditation reporting. We used the accreditation reports, support personnel reports, certified personnel reports in our determination of administrative cost payroll. That led us to these accreditation reports where the employees were all coded in each school's accreditation reporting at 60-40. So all, I believe it was around 950 approximately employees were recorded 60% as a one-on-one employee and 40% as a blended employee. Once again, we're back to this is not accurate reporting of the issue. It should be noted too that one-on-one pays all payroll for blended and one-on-one. We will talk about that here in a minute as far as that being commingling, or would a school be able to do that? Are these two schools separate and distinct? We believe they are. We'll talk about that some more in a minute. But the accreditation reporting also showed inaccurate, not actual activity of the school. The employees were coded differently in accreditation than OCAS. Job codes were different. The percentages were different. They were not consistent. Also, as part of payroll, we looked at teacher retirement. This is an issue. All the blended teachers, as we said, are paid by one-on-one. They're all reported in the teacher retirement system under one-on-one's membership. Blended at this time has not been admitted to the teacher retirement. Their application was denied. That was at the time based on one-on-one being deficient in some of their requirements. And so the retirement system chose not to approve blended, being under the same management organization. Yes.
This Bill Flanagan, when you did the calculations year on year, does each year stand alone? And was there any years where there was no excess administration?
Yes, we do have each year broke out, and they do stand on their own, and no, there was no year that there was not an excess. As to teacher retirement, we did report that all of the total compensation of some employees, we only reported on 8 in the report itself, did not agree to what teacher retirement had in their system. This was discussed by Epic in the press that this was based on bonuses. We did not actually cover that and report the bonus issue in our report. If you'll go back and read the report, we did not mention the bonus issue. There is discrepancy between Epic and teacher retirement as to whether the bonuses that Epic teachers receive should be reported in the retirement system. That really is outside of our purview to make that decision. Epic received some communications back in approximately 2013 that implied to them that bonuses would not be reported. That communication we did, of course, not see all of it. We're looking at old emails and bits and pieces, but they were given that advice back in approximately 2013. Our discussions with current legal counsel at Teacher Retirement was their consideration is that the bonuses should be reported and should have been reported. They're taking that stance, as I understand it. It's because the bonuses are available to all teachers. The issue to them was if the bonuses are independent to one person or to one position, then they would not be reported. But if they're available to across the board to all teachers, they should be included. This is just an issue that the school and the retirement system will have to work out. Though we did not mention the bonuses in the report, there were still discrepancies between what Epic reported on their payroll register and what was in the teacher retirement system, even if you removed the bonuses. So we chose not to include that in the report because it is an issue that's a legal issue that's outside of our purview. Next chapter, chapter four, was called allocated dues and fees. This is a term that the school uses for shared resources and shared payroll, shared between blended and one-on-one. So the main question in this issue, when we saw these payments, it was $28.5 million over two fiscal years paid by blended to one-on-one. There was no defined agreement or contract in place for this payment. We were told several times that this was basically based on a cash flow need. Our determination and concern was, are these separate and distinct school districts? And should they be sharing expenses at this level without some type of agreement or an interlocal cooperative agreement as defined in the statutes that school districts can do? Here was our evaluation that, are they two school districts? We believe they are. There's two charters, two sponsors, two boards that meet separately, two independent audits, and two school district identifiers. We believe, and as I believe SDE would support this in the communications we have seen, that they are two distinct school districts. The teacher retirement system also believes they should be two distinct school districts. There was actually a communication to teacher retirement system when Belinda was trying to be approved to become a member that the superintendent, David Cheney at the time, also communicated that they were two distinct school districts. And so it isn't an issue that the sharing of cost and payroll should not be done without an interlocal cooperative agreement in place or some other type of legal process to allow that. So we questioned that $28.5 million as it should not have been paid. There were also, as part of these transactions, there were two transfers totaling $6 million, one $5 million, one $1 million, that were made without board approval. The payments were issued after the end of the fiscal year against a PO, and they were never entered into the encumbrance register, so they were never submitted to the board for approval. So that $6 million went from blended to one-on-one without any approval. There was also one loan found in the viewing of these transactions. It blended loaned one-on-one $3.3 million through a direct bank transfer. Did not go through the books, through a purchase order, through a board meeting. It was basically a bank transfer from one school to the other directly. $3.3 million. It was paid back, I think, approximately 4 to 6 weeks later. Any questions on that? Okay. Chapter 5 was the Learning Fund. Here's the payments to the Learning Fund. The Learning Fund is an amount that the school has set aside for each student to have choices in their curriculum and their extracurricular. It ranged from $800 to $1,000 per year and was calculated and paid to Epic Youth Services, the management organization, based on student count. As you can see, these amounts are large. And actually, we did not report details in our report concerning this situation. As most of y'all know, this is in litigation, and we really won't be discussing it in detail. Once that litigation is complete, we will move forward with either auditing or reporting these issues. As you can see, though, with the Learning Fund, had a total of $79.3 million in that six-year period. That coupled with the management fee of $45.9 million is you have almost 28% of EPIC's school budget goes to EPIC Youth Services outside of the purview of the taxpayers of Oklahoma. That's why the calculation and the use of the Learning Fund is so important, is those funds, almost $80 million, has not been audited by any organization and has not been reviewed by any audit organization. The student count was something that we did try to determine what student count should have been used to allow these calculations. That was not documented in any contract. It was not documented on the EYS invoices. Other than 1 year and 16, it was. There's much discussion that we will add at a later date about this process. But in the contract, as you can see on the screen, the Learning Fund initially for 5 years had this clause that's underlined that these payments would be made pursuant to an invoice schedule. That invoice schedule never existed. When we requested a copy of it, it did not exist. In August of 2019, the day before we actually started our audit, that clause was removed from the Learning Fund charter school operating agreement and changed to say that the funds would be used to by EYS to purchase and manage school assets and services on behalf of the school. So the invoice schedule was not provided and did not exist. We were told this change was made due to a discovered clerical error. We never got further confirmation on that calculation.
So Ms. Holt, when the total number, go ahead, Bill.
These funds came from one of the two charter schools, is that correct?
Yes.
And therefore, there should have been an accounting back into the OCAS system to break those costs down, since that's really a transfer out. Was there accounting, were you able to come up with a accounting and how that affected the OCAS system as it exists for 15 through 19?
Yes, the payments were coded in OCAS. I believe they were 100% coded to instruction, which is code 1000. So when the payments were made to EPIC Youth Services, those checks were 100% coded to instruction.
And was that correct?
We do
we
not
have no way to determine that, whether that was correct or not.
We do not.
Correct?
We do not know that that's correct, because we are not allowed to see what that money is spent on. Now, the contract does require that the money be spent on behalf of the students. And so we would anticipate when we do get to see in the Learning Fund, of course, that those expenditures will be for instruction or on behalf of the students, but we do not know at this time.
In a normal audit situation in a public school, whatever the balance is, if it's not actually spent on students, still remains in the possession of the school district. In this case, it's a separate entity, and if I understand, it's a profit LLC and not part of the school district. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Brenda, do you mind if I jump in real quick?
No, that's fine.
I just wanted to point out that we did not find any transactions that came back from EYS to the district as far as returning any unused Learning Fund monies that were sent over from Blended or 101.
Ms. Holt, on was that total number between the learning fund and the management fee, was that about $150
million? 125.
So just in context, whenever you say we don't have visibility, in other words, the Oklahoma taxpayers don't have visibility, there is no detailed, am I correct in saying there's no detailed numbers that come back into OCAS for the transactions tied to those numbers?
Yes, the learning fund portion, that 80 million is coded 100% to instruction. And we do not know if that's what it was spent on. It cannot be seen and has not been audited. The management fee was the stuff we were discussing earlier, the 45.9 million of management fee. That's why the itemization from the charter management organization is so important. It's for OCAS, education, and of course, all the way out to the federal reporting to see what that 45 million was actually spent on. Okay, so that is the purpose of the OCAS reporting that we talked about earlier. And if those detailed invoices and that detailed actual information is not given, then the school is not reporting what they spent the money on. If that detail is not broken down, in our opinion, those funds should have been reported as administrative costs because they're going to the management company for administration. Now, if that's not what it's being spent on, then we would request that invoicing of those management fees be detailed and accurate as to what it's being spent on. If you go back and look at those management fee numbers that we looked at earlier, EYS was reporting certified salaries on their report in those invoices. Okay, we did determine that EYS only had 3 employees. Now they do contract labor, we do know that. And I'm sure they do a lot of contracting that we're not aware of. But I think there was an inquiry as to if they're reporting certified salaries and those identical cost percentages that we're reporting on the invoices, that would be teachers, certified teachers. And as far as we're aware, there were not certified teachers that were employees of EYS. So that's an example of not getting the actual information that's required.
So I want to make sure I'm understanding what data this board has access to and tied into the bigger picture of what we do. On an annual basis, we ask for state appropriations of approximately $3 billion, and $125 million of that comes out to right around 4.1%. So you're telling me I do not have access or oversight over 4.1% of state appropriated funds that run through this department?
That is correct. As far as having true knowledge of what those expenditures, you are trusting the report coding in OCAS of instruction for the learning fund and the other issues for management fee that you're seeing, but you have no access to request purchase orders, invoices, or any support for those transactions.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, then we move to chapter 6, Community Strategies, CA. This is an organization that we basically discovered, and when we were looking at revenue, we found a deposit that was noted in the revenue sources that said Community Strategies, CA. That's what inquired caused us to move forward in determining what this organization was and what it had to do with Ethics Board Community Strategies. This was an organization that was created in a Community Strategies Board meeting. It was presented in that board meeting, and there's a lot of detail in the report that I won't cover here, but it was presented in that board meeting as an organization that was going to be a management organization for Ethic Charter Schools California. So that was approved during our EPIC board meeting. They also, during those meetings and during this process, pledged the school district's assets for EPIC California to receive funding. They pledged the bank account of 101 as an attachment for those assets. Community Strategy CA then also Yes.
When you say EPIC 101's bank account, are state taxpayer dollars the only thing that should be in that bank account?
Yes.
Oklahoma taxpayer dollars.
Yes, that is one-on-one's general fund where the state appropriations are actually deposited.
And it's being pledged for something in California.
Yes, it was pledged for collateral for a loan to establish Epic California. Community Strategy CA also entered into an intercompany agreement with 1-on-1 to use 1-on-1 state employees for administration of Epic California. They also entered into the same agreement to provide administrative employees to Pinole Public School District. The activity that 1-on-1 employees performed for Epic California went almost 3 years, totaling almost $140,000, and was not repaid until we actually requested and subpoenaed payment information. So the state employees of 1-on-1 were doing administrative work for Epic California for no cost for those 3 years. The same transactions, yes, sir. Mr. Flanagan.
Back to that reimbursement. Are the same employees included in our administrative number on excess administrative cost? And was that revenue netted against those costs if they were?
Yes, the short answer is yes, they are included in that. Salisha, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
The last part,
I didn't see anything in the coding that would show that that revenue was added back in as far as classifying those expenditures. That's partially due to the fact that they didn't even pay it back until we brought it to their attention during the audit.
But there was an obligation to pay it back, was it not?
Yes.
Ms. Holt, do you know if there are still Oklahoma State employees that are doing work in California?
Yes. As far as they're not actually working in California, they're here at Epic. But yes, as far as we know, that work continues and did continue through the audit period. It may have ended in the last month, but is that correct, Reiner? Do you remember the last date of those invoices? I think at least through July of 2020, they were still being used for Epic California and being reimbursed. Reiner, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, they were doing work for both Pinole and for Epic California through the end of the last fiscal year. So at least through June of 2020, we do not know. Pinole has stopped, but we do not know what the current status is of Epic California.
And I understand that they obviously aren't physically going there and doing work, but still providing administrative or back office support. We talked earlier about there are certain functions, I believe that is possible with maybe the appropriate either interagency or interdistrict paperwork that goes along with it. Do you know if Oklahoma State statute allows for public schools, and I'm calling it Epic Public School, for their employees to do work out of state, or, I mean, and it would go for any school, are public employees allowed to do work for other states?
Let me show you the statute that we, and we're not going to give definitive answers on law, but let me show the statute that we were looking at. Title 70, 18-104, that funds apportioned and dispersed to the several school districts of the state shall be for the purpose of aiding each school district receiving the same finance and school budget for each fiscal year. Well, that didn't read well. Basically, the statute says that the funds apportioned to that district are to be used for that district. So that was our interpretation, which we will leave that up to the legal counsels going forward. But our interpretation was if the funds are apportioned to your school district, it's to be used for your school district.
Okay, thank you. And Brad, can we just take note? I would ask that maybe later on you give us some discussion on that.
Sure.
So back to that issue as a whole, we had the 139,000 plus not paid that was repaid when we subpoenaed it. We had Panola with 25,000, same situation that one-on-one employees had provided for that school district for 2 years without getting paid. The fiscal year 20 invoices were also not paid until we subpoenaed that information. So some of them were up to 11 months old. You know, and like you said, the question was, should the services even been provided at all? That's sort of the bigger question. Also in doing this work, we discovered through looking at Epic California transactions, we received records from California, and the records reflected that $203,000 had been transferred out of the Learning Fund directly to Epic California. We also do not believe that this money should have went to that purpose. The Student Learning Fund should not have been accessible to Community Strategies California. The reason they were is because the CFO, Josh Brock, who is the CFO of Epic Charter Schools, he's also the CFO of Epic Youth Services, EYS, and he's also the CFO for Community Strategies CA. So when that relationship exists and he is the CFO for all three entities, there's access to those bank accounts that are state funds, in our opinion, in the Learning Fund that are being used for the other entities, that access should not be there.
Brenda, the yes. $203,000, is that additional amount to be recovered in excess of the 8.9?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Here
on Brenda, go ahead.
The statutes that we believe apply to this, once again, we'll refer to legal going forward, but Title 70, 18-118 says that school districts and officers and employees thereof who divert any monies received by a district from the purpose for which the monies were apportioned to the district shall be jointly and severally liable for such diversion. That's the statute we believe applies in this situation. Also, part of that statute in Section C says if audits disclose that state monies have been illegally apportioned to or illegally dispersed or expended by a school district, the State Board of Education shall make demand that the monies be returned to the state treasurer by such school district. These are the statutes that we feel apply. This would also, of course, apply to the OCAS issues, but it would also apply to the loaning of state employees and the sending of student learning funds to California.
Brenda?
Yes.
That I want to make sure that I understand exactly what happened on that last $203,000. Appropriated monies come to the State Department. It flows through the virtual charter school board. $203,000 ends up at Epic Public Schools. $203,000 moves to Epic Youth Service Learning Fund. And then there was a check written from Epic Youth Services account, Learning Fund account to Epic California?
Yes, other than it was a transfer, not a check, but you're correct. That's okay. The flow of the money. Where the issue is for us, as we have discussed, when the money is paid to the Student Learning Fund, it goes behind the wall and we cannot see it. And so the use of those student learning funds, in our opinion, should be for public purposes. The contract said they should be for students on behalf of the students. So whether you're looking at law or a contract, those funds should not have went to Epic California, and they were transferred from one bank account to the other.
And to clarify, those funds in OCAS were coded to be 1,000, which is instruction, correct?
Correct.
So that 203,000 went into Epic Youth Service Learning Fund, was sent to California, but was coded in OCAS as a 1,000 instruction?
Yes.
And you, if we aren't able to, if we aren't able to see the Epic Youth Services Learning Fund, if we're not able to see those transactions, how did you find out that it was transferred to California?
We actually communicated with an investigative organization in California. And by that, they provided us invoices. We then found the transaction of the bank that Epic California deals with. And we received the bank statements directly from the bank in California. So we did not see the student learning fund side. We saw the deposit sources and transaction and wire sources from the California bank. And we knew the bank account numbers that we had gotten off bank statements. So we never actually saw the transactions on the learning fund side. We are seeing those strictly on the California side, but we got these sources, deposit sources and wire transfer sources that show the source bank of the transfer.
Okay, thank you.
And okay, how, may I ask, so I understand in this, we have evidence that funds through the learning fund that were coded in as 1,000, which is instruction, were sent, transferred to California. But we do not have any idea what else has happened with these. Now, is it 79 million?
Yes, that is true. We do not know. I will also, this slide shows an estimate, as you can see, the breakdown of management fees, student learning, and the total for the years. As you can see in 2021, with the growth of Epic, the estimated amount of management fees and student learning funds is almost double what it was previously. So those monies continue to go behind the wall outside of audit view. So moving on to chapter 7, our review of audits. This was the request of Governor Stitt that we do a 3-year look back of any other previously issued audits. We did that. If you can see in the report, basically the entities that had audited Epic were CBEW, that's their public auditor. They have done the audit every year since inception. Through 10 audit reports of both one-on-one and blended, there were no reported findings and no exceptions. And we also inquired as to whether any management letter had ever been communicated to Epic with exceptions, and it had not been. We also looked at OEQA, Educational Quality and Accountability Office. They did a performance review in November of 16. They did identify several non-financial recommendations, but also had other positive recommendations. We will say that under that audit. OEQA also provided some oversight and reviews for the virtual board. Annual reports of a high level nature as far as reviewing reports for the virtual board. And Community Strategies has now hired an internal auditor as of January 2020. We know this auditor has completed 2 audits, one on compliance updating of website and one on the learning fund. They may have done more since this time, since July. The findings they found on the learning fund were immaterial in nature. But they were, as we understand it, actually looking at the transactions out of the learning fund. We're not for sure what they covered in detail. So there were audits going on, but I think the issue, as we've already discussed in accountability, there's a display, an attachment in the back of the report that shows the audits that Epic presented they had over the last several years. Most of these are not financial in nature. Most of these are not, of course, to the level that we would do an audit, an investigative audit. They had a lot to do with federal reporting, financial flex benefit reporting, payroll reporting, special ed reporting, and education related. So we did not spend much time looking at these audit reports and any support for them, because most of them did not apply to the areas that we were auditing. Going on to chapter 8, these were separate issues. The first issue is called sponsorship fees. EYS is paid the management fee, as we have discussed. They're paid 10% total collected revenue. I believe the contract says, yes, all collected revenues. EYS has chosen to take that 10% of the total appropriations paid to the district through the sponsors. So what that means is the State Department of Education sends the appropriations, salary, foundation incentive aid, to the sponsors. The sponsors retain up to 5% of that. Right now, the contract allows them, they've chosen to retain 3%. The virtual board only actually retains up to, I think, 120% of their budgeted amount, and then they pass the rest through. But statutorily, Rose State and the virtual board are allowed to maintain up to 5% of the appropriations. So when EYS is invoicing their management fee, they have chosen to take 10% of the total appropriations that is sent to the virtual board in Rose State instead of the 97% right now that they're actually receiving in their bank accounts. We took disagreement with that. They do not agree with this, and we understand that. But in our opinion, the statutes have defined that money for a separate agency and a separate purpose. So in our opinion, as their contract says, funds that are used on behalf of the school, those funds would never be used on behalf of the school because they are not statutorily allowed to receive that amount if the boards choose to keep it. On top of that calculation, we evaluated their financial audits. And their financial auditor, their independent auditor, also did not report the virtual and Rose State board's amounts that they kept. He did not report those as revenue in their audited financial statements, which to us was even more proof that these were not the school's revenues. So that's the exception and finding that we're reporting, and that equated to $686,000 that, in our opinion, EYS should not have received in management. The next issue under other issues was advertising. I will say up front.
Yes, EPIC responded with a special engagement from Grant Thornton. And if I understand that report that they issued correct, is that they underpaid the administrative fees by $2.6 million roughly. But that report, all it did was look at the contract, but it never determined how that $2.6 million was spent and how that affected the OCAS report. Is that correct?
Some of that's correct. I think the report you're referring to is Grant Thornton was asked to recalculate the student learning fund payments, not the management fee. That was the student learning fund payments. And yes, they did recalculate those and we were provided with that information. That information, we were advised not to report on the student learning fund in our report. So there were issues that we discussed and initially had shared with EPIC that we would include in the report, that we later chose not to because of respect for the court and the court case. But yes, what you're asking is Grant Thornton did present a recalculation of the student learning fund reporting that EYS is actually underpaid. I believe it was about 2.6 million. A couple of issues on that. Number one is EPIC has even since that report, EYS has taken another $1 million payment against that. So even if that was correct, that's down to 1.6. The other issues that we did not get into here, and I think it would probably be best that we didn't because of the volume of information, but we do have documented proof that those other calculations, especially for 2016, were not correct. And then there is discussion that student count that's used in that calculation has not been approved by the board, is not in a contract, and it is debatable, in our opinion, that the student count was correct. In our opinion, that calculation would be an entire different number. Now, I think Epic also put out that we were provided that Grant Thornton had recalculated this sponsorship fee issue also. If that happened, we were not informed of it and we were not provided any information or recalculation on that. Epic did make it clear that they didn't agree with us on this issue and that they would continue to take the 10% of the 100%. And we were told, I think that Grant Thornton, or didn't tell, I read in their response that Grant Thornton had provided some work on that, but we never saw that and was not provided. I hope that answers your question. Okay, moving on to advertising. I will say up front that advertising is not illegal under Oklahoma statutes for a school to advertise. We reported this for a couple of reasons. One is, in our opinion, $2.6 million in advertising over a four-month period, I think in anybody's Oklahoma budget, is excessive, especially considering the questionable and constant funding needs of education. To spend that type of money on advertising for one school district just seemed inappropriate, in our opinion, although it is allowable, I will say, under statute. The school also contracted with Penn Square Mall and Woodland Hills Mall in Oklahoma City and Tulsa for $525,000 in contracts for playgrounds at the mall. Again, probably allowable. There were some coding questions in this. We were told by Epic that these were for physical fitness and instructional programming use, and that all large Oklahoma school districts and charter schools have playgrounds. We could not argue with that. All large school districts usually do have playgrounds, but not necessarily a virtual school. These contracts were also multi-year contracts, which obligated the school to multi-year indebtedness, which violates constitutional provision of Article 10, Section 26, or the pay-as-you-go statute. It's not that you can't have a multi-year contract, but those contracts have to have a cancellation clause in them if you have a multi-year contract, and these did not. So they did obligate the school for more than 1 year budget now. The last part of this section of the report was related parties. I think throughout the report, if you're reading and even talking today, the lines are very blurred between community strategies, Epic Charter Schools, and Epic Youth Services. As we've already talked about, Josh Brock is the CFO and encumbrance clerk for one-on-one and blended, CFO for EYS, CFO for community strategies, CA. David Cheney, the co-founder, was also the superintendent of the school till fiscal year 2020, and is also the co-owner of Epic Youth Services. Harris also was the co-founder of the school, the co-owner of Epic Youth Services. He's involved in the school's affairs. His name's on several contracts, and he was instrumental in the development of Epic California. So with all of these individuals involved at several levels of these transactions, it really blurs the line as to where the school and its districts and its management starts and stops. These positions allow for EYS to invoice on one hand and turn around and actually pay that invoice with the other hand. So the transactions were being done by the same individuals on both sides of the coin.
Brenda, I want to add something to that. Oh, sorry. I just wanted to point out that the individual invoicing, Mr. Brock, was also the individual we saw in the data that he was responsible for coding those transactions in OCAS.
Yes, good point.
Ms. Holt, in reviewing your transaction or reviewing the transactions that you have audited, do you have a sense of exactly what Epic Youth Services provides to Epic Public Schools? Because you've mentioned that Epic Public Schools has a CFO, Epic Public Schools has a superintendent. These are the things that normally run, these are the people who normally run our public school districts. Can you give me a sense of exactly what Epic Youth Service is providing back to Epic Public Schools?
Well, Josh Brock, who's listed as the CFO for Epic, is actually, as we understand, and we haven't seen the detail, as we understand it, is a contract employee of EYS. So Josh Brock's position would be part of the provision of Epic Youth Services. Outside of that position, we did not see any other individuals from Epic Youth Services involved in any of Epic Schools transactions. As we've said, they do not have the three employees, and those employees, to our knowledge, were not involved in any of Epic Charter Schools activity. So we're not for sure, and I don't know that we can answer that in any definitive way because we have not seen those transactions.
And I guess that kind of comes to my point, or I'm trying to get a better understanding. I don't know why a public school has a CFO and then needs to contract with the management company for a CFO, especially if it's the exact same person. And so I'm just trying to get a better sense of that. Okay. But it sounds like you don't have it.
I don't. And the school is not paying Josh Brock, okay? He's listed as the CFO, but he's not paid by the school. So his payment, we're assuming, is coming from EYS and from their management fee. Now, it should be noted, we didn't talk about this, and again, I don't want to get too in-depth about Learning Fund, but it should be noted that the Learning Fund, although in EYS's bank account, is being managed and controlled by State of Oklahoma employees, okay? So the Learning Fund managers, the Learning Fund director, the activity that they perform, the computers they work on, their location, it's all State of Oklahoma employees. They're in Teacher Retirement System of Oklahoma, and they are on site at the state's business, but they are managing EYS's Learning Fund.
Clarification. Yes, you're telling me that Epic Public School employees, fund managers, are state employees receiving state retirement, state benefits, they are dispersing Learning Fund dollars on behalf of children, but those funds that are being managed by state employees, we cannot see?
Yes. And that is what we are fighting for, to get access to for the state of Oklahoma.
Thank you.
Yes.
Brenda, I have one more point. Earlier when we talked about the administrative services to Panola and to California, we didn't mention that there are also employees that are working in taxpayer-funded facilities and on taxpayer equipment. So that support, those costs were not included in the invoices that were provided to us that were reimbursed from those districts.
That's the end of our presentation.
Yes, sir. Was there a markup, or was the cost determined based on cost inside Oklahoma, or was there a markup on these services?
Are you talking about the services that were billed to California and NOAA?
Yes.
There's actually a cost allocation formula. Fairly complicated, about dividing the number of Epic students by the number of California students and then coming up with a percentage. And so depending on the school and the year, there would be a list of anywhere from 20, 25 employees. And this cost allocation methodology would come down to approximately, I know one year was maybe around 2.8%. And those percentages were then applied to those employees' salaries. So that's how it was estimated as to how much they were billing California and Panola. Now, we did do some recalculation, and it appeared that even for those employees that were listed as recalculated, they did not include their benefits necessarily in those amounts. And so that would have reduced the actual amount, even based on that approximation methodology. So we also noted, as we had been informed, is one employee was considered the California comptroller, And as we understood, that was her position, was that she was the comptroller for Epic California. If that was the case, then we anticipated that her entire salary should have been billed out to California, and it was not. We did put a small mention of that in the report, and we did not recalculate a lot of that. But that is another issue that should have been considered, is that, once again, all 25 employees were calculated in an exact identical approximation methodology, and that that probably was not the accurate way to account for those funds. Whether they should have been occurring at all, if they were occurring, that's probably not the accurate way to be reporting that. The last thing I wanted to mention was, I know our report had the title of part one on it. We do consider that after these final presentations with you and the virtual board, that this report and the work papers related to it will be locked down. This report will stand on its own, and it will be considered final. It's not 100% determined as to whether there will be a part two. A lot of that will depend on the legal case and how it plays out. We will lock down this report, all work papers that support it, and those will be evaluated and prepared for open records release and requests that we have received. So this report will be a standalone final report as part one.
Ms. Holt, I have a question. This is Estella Hernandez. With this report and the audit, has it been turned over to the Attorney General's office?
Yes, ma'am, it has.
Have you received or had any communication with him? If so, what has that communication been?
I really can't share at that right now. All we know that they have had access to the report and any other support they want. As we understand, going forward, there will be further communication and meetings with them to discuss the process. We have other meetings this week with the virtual board and other authorities in that area. So I really can't weigh into exact response. I guess you will have to get that from them.
But they have communicated, I guess is my question. They have communicated, yes, with you.
Yes, absolutely.
Brenda, this is Bill Flanagan. On the $8.9 million over payment on the administrative situation, but it was mentioned in there that it could be much larger than that. So when you finalize a report, are you saying that we're not going to go back and look at the, see if there's even more money that should be recaptured to the state? And these are the final numbers when you tie this down?
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is if we need to assist an organization, yourself or the virtual board or someone else, with defining numbers in great detail, we will do that with these work papers. But no, we do not anticipate doing further work in these specific areas. Okay, if we do a part two, that's not to say that something that would come to light in our follow-up wouldn't be pulled forward and added to the part two audit and reported there separately. But as far as the exact issues and the numbers we're dealing with, we would like to consider those finished and complete under this report so that we can close out our work papers and release those as needed. And then everything else will be rolled forward. If we choose to expand, we would do that under part two.
Thanks.
Brenda, I first of all appreciate the presentation and just wanted to add a few thoughts and highlights to what's been shared today. I have worked for a national charter management organization. I've also ran a local charter school here in Oklahoma. And I will say, you know, as we were going through and talking about OCAS and coding, it is a process that every single public school superintendent goes through. I went through it on a weekly basis. The routine nature of this and supports are available. So I was very much so taken aback by how funds were placed, even as I read, and you didn't go through every aspect of the findings, but just not placing those in there in a timely manner, placing holdings, putting them and going back and recoding at the end. I mean, there were a lot of glaring errors that I feel like has been stated in rationale as something that's a bureaucratic system and having to do these steps, but it is honestly something that must be done for us to be held accountable to the public dollars that are supposed to be spent for children. I look at this and the findings that you've presented, and also just out of deep admiration and respect for this board, knowing that we have been known to very much so be on top of funding matters and looking into issues and ensuring that public dollars are spent in the ways that were intended. And it's clear from the Oklahoma law that this audit shows us that there must be money that is going back to the state, because it has been illegally dispersed based upon what you have brought up today. I just wanted to add voiceover to that, and having sat in that role and understanding the ins and outs of this time and time again as I read it, playing back through my own lived experiences, this is not normal. This is not okay. And I do think that it requires action of this board and body to say that this is not acceptable, and it's by law our responsibility to do something here in this setting.
Thank you.
Ms. Holt, for clarity's purpose, we've talked about a lot of numbers. If from a final audit perspective, can you tell us the exact number that the state auditor is saying needs to be recouped by this board?
Well, at this time, I think I'm not for sure what lane your board would be in complete recoup. At this time, the $8.3 million, which is the 8.9 minus the $500,000 that's already been recouped in 2019's overage, at least the $2.6 million of the prior administrative cost question. We have the $203,000, if it's not been repaid to the Learning Fund, we do not know that for sure, would be in that recoup number. That would be the more definitive numbers that I would give you today.
Okay, that would be all three of those cumulatively. They aren't rolled into each other.
You would add those three together.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
So we are done, unless y'all have further questions. Thank you for listening.
I do think that there could be other questions, so please stay with us.
Sure.
I think that it is also worth noting, simply because of the timing of the start of our board meeting, and to answer that question about the involvement of the Attorney General's office, as well as other investigative bodies outside our office and outside this discussion, today, there was an announcement that there has been appointed by the Attorney General special counsel to review today, to review the audit with their criminal investigation unit. So just so you are aware, since that question came up. And then I also want to say that I can tell you that we also have on and available today those members of the State Department of Education who work with student personnel records. That could speak to other questions that you have, as well as the OCAS system. That is not something that's unique to Oklahoma. Board Member Bradley mentioned that as a superintendent of a charter school, yes, in Oklahoma, this is something that is used and expected to be used, but it's also ties in with federal reporting of expenses, and those are used all across the country in similar fashion. So this is not new. This should not be something that we continue to have to chase down. And it is also, as you, if you were to speak more in depth about that with those who have been working in our offices. They will tell you, and there is certainly evidence to show that, they have worked very hard to remind not only Epic, but anyone else, but particularly as we're talking about those who are operating this OCAS system for Epic, reminders of their deadlines, the questions that we need clarification that go unanswered. So I do want you to feel free to ask any questions that you have, especially while we still have individuals here today from the auditor's office as well as here at the department.
Ms. Holt, how either easy or difficult has it been for you to get verification of transactions throughout this process?
We did run into great resistance that our office is not used to. It was not a normal situation. I mean, we started the process in an entrance conference, as we call it, the first meet and greet. We provided a list of documents at that meeting, and there was almost no response or documents provided for approximately 6 weeks. At that point, we started getting pushback as to what we were asking for. So we basically went to a subpoena process. That is not normal. We do issue subpoenas, but not for all documentation. It was just at this point, because of the legal counsel that was put between us and most of the Epic employees and records, not most, but all, it was just easier to do the subpoena process. That way we had tracking and accountability. Most of those transactions and those subpoenas were slow responses, some of them late. We also were used in an investigative nature, an audit of this level of attending and going to a school district and having complete access to their file cabinets and their desk and whatever we need. We actually do that in almost all of our investigative audits. We were met with great resistance with that. I know Epic has put out that they provided us a room. That is true. But we probably spent approximately 5 to 7 days on site, I would say maybe during the entire year. I know one of our investigators showed up unannounced one time, and it was we were asked not to do that again. And that's really not normal in the process of an investigative audit. The goal is to show up unannounced, is to talk to people that are not the head of the school. We prefer to try to talk to people without legal counsel in a very casual, not that legal counsel is not allowed at all times, but we would like to talk to people in a casual day-to-day setting, and that just was not really possible with Epic. So it was difficult in that sense. But I do believe every meeting, if not, and I don't want to say every meeting. We were presented with legal counsel, at least 1, 2, and sometimes 3 legal counsel with us in these meetings. I don't know if one of the staff, Sleisha Reiner, if y'all would like to add comment to that. They were in the field more, but it was not a normal process, I will say that.
I think the only thing that I would add to that is that when I was on site and I would request a document, a lot of times I was met with a response of, well, you'll have to talk to Josh Brock to obtain that record, which is highly unusual. Normally, as Brenda said, we would just go to the file cabinet and pull it ourselves.
I think the only other thing that I'd like to add to that is that the legal counsel wasn't always Community Strategies legal counsel. So matter of fact, half the time the legal counsel was EYS legal counsel. So there really was no difference between Community Strategies and EYS. You would talk to somebody and from Community Strategies, but there being EYS legal counsel sitting there. So from their perspective, they're one and the same.
From a SDE standpoint, do we have staff who might be able to speak to Dealing with a district, I mean, with Epic being the largest district in the state, somebody like Oklahoma City or Tulsa, that's a comparable district in the number of transactions that happen and the types of OCAS issues that pop up, either the similarities or dissimilarities between the experience with those type of districts.
Kathy, is that something you could answer?
Certainly, I'd be glad to address that. With Oklahoma City and Tulsa, to put things in perspective, Epic Blended and Epic One-on-One are uploading one fund. Oklahoma City uploads 16 funds, and Tulsa uploads 36 funds. There is a large difference in the number of times or the number of times they upload, the errors they get, and how long it is before their data is locked to be able to review that. So, and the districts have to lock their data before we know they're ready for us to start looking at it. The review process doesn't take as long because usually their things are in order. So there's not as many questions that arise with some of the other larger school districts.
I've got a question about our OCAS system. Do we have a similar, any school district that's similar that has two independent school districts under the control of one entity? And have we had these type of difficulties in allocating costs and administrative costs with these districts in the state of Oklahoma?
No, we do not have the same situation with any other school district. School districts might share a superintendent, but still their financials and everything else, the two school districts are operated as separate entities. Epic One and Epic Blended are very unique. They're the only districts that combine all that.
Thanks.
Sure.
Ms. Black, you had mentioned that I think Tulsa had and Oklahoma City had respectively 34 and 16 funds that they manage. Whenever we talk about funds, are those funds that are in public bank accounts that either SDE or the public can view and get reports on?
Yes, they are. They are. With an open records request to the individual school district, they would have access to all that information.
Are you aware of any school districts that take school dollars and place them into a private account where an open records request would not be effective or that the general public would not be able to see the transactions?
No, I'm not aware of any school district that would take taxpayers' dollars and put them into a public or a private account. No, I'm not aware of any school district that does that.
And I'll also add that's illegal to be done. Even if there are separated funds, it would go into an activities fund account. I mean, there's so many stipulations that even the State Department goes over in training for becoming a charter school superintendent and the process thereof. So I just wanted to highlight that it is very well known that those are practices that can occur.
All right, board members, do you have additional questions? All right.
Hey Brenda, will you highlight again what you believe is recoverable under Oklahoma law? I think I missed one of the elements. You had three elements a minute ago, and I think I missed one of them.
Yes, I think I had said the $8.3 million, which is the $8.9 million in payroll minus the $500 previous recouped overage, then the $2.6 million from 2016, and then the 203,000 from the Learning Fund.
The 2.6 million in 2000, what year?
16.
Is that already in your 8.9 million now?
No, it is not.
And what is that 2.6 million for again?
It was the miscoded administrative cost that was initially coded as administrative cost and then removed down
Thank
to
you.
Zero.
Let me understand that. The 2.6 million in administrative costs, Brenda.
Yes.
I thought when you went back in and did your calculation of what the administrative cost was, then you applied the 5% limitation. Wouldn't that already include the 2.6 million in administrative costs? Would there be a duplication there? Guess what I'm getting at.
No, I don't believe there is a duplication, which we will provide you those calculations. Felicia, am I missing something here?
No, we took that into consideration, especially with payroll. We eliminated the payroll that they initially recorded because there was a small portion, and then we recalculated it based on what it should have been based on those positions. So once we got that total, we applied the 5% limit. And then that was a difference. 8.9 was a difference. And on the 2.6 of the management fee, it was 2.9 that was reclassified. But once you applied the 5%, it dropped to 2.6.
The other question I have is that when you take blended expenditures, was the 5% applied against a total expenditures of blended and the other charter are, and was that calculated individually?
Individually. We calculated them. They do report in the OCAS as separate districts. They were calculated individually.
Okay. And you can provide us that work paper?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Holt, can I ask, and I know we've talked about it before, as far as a breakdown of exactly where the 8.9, I mean, I know we're talking about the 2.6 as well, but where the 8.9 came from, and is that something that, I don't know, has been detailed, I guess, to Epic and given them the opportunity to say, you know, that they agree with that number or don't agree with that number, kind of where that stands?
Yes, we definitely have a spreadsheet that breaks down line by line each employee and the totals, and then those numbers are calculated against the total expenditures and the 5% that comes down to these numbers, and we will provide that in detail. Celicia, you might have to answer specifically if you gave Epic that spreadsheet. We did discuss in great detail with mostly with Epic legal counsel, the classification of these employees. That is the days that Celicia spent the most time on in the presence of Josh Brock and legal counsel in these discussions. So they were very aware. They provided us a very lengthy and detailed discussion of their opinion on the issues. And we did look at that, and that's where we came in possibly reclassifying some of the individuals that were titled as director as not being administrative. And that's where we also came back and discovered that they had, as the school reported, those individuals. And so we added them back in for that year. So yes, those things were discussed with Epic. I'm not for sure, Celicia, that we provided them that actual full spreadsheet when we were done.
No, we didn't give them
the spreadsheet. We will be glad to do.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. We didn't give them the spreadsheet, but we did. I mean, I sat down with them for probably approximately 5 hours in one setting where I showed them exact documentation, exact coding, how that was flowing through from their accreditation to their OCAS codes. We discussed different positions, their job descriptions. And like Brenda said, all of that was taken into consideration and then reevaluated and then ultimately applied back the positions that they had themselves certified as administrative costs.
So that 8.9 million is reflecting back what they've already verified through their payroll.
A portion of it would be what they had claimed, not in total. For example, some of their assistant superintendents were not claimed at all, but the statute clearly specifies that. That's a line item in there. So we discussed that at great length. Josh Brock responded to that. He admitted that was an oversight on their part. So I do believe that they were completely aware of these different positions. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you. It does.
How confident are you in the 8.9? And I'm still trying, I know it's been asked multiple times, but trying to determine, does the audit specifically ask about anything other than the 8.9? Does it ask about clawing back the 2.6? Trying to continue to get a handle on this number.
Well, we are confident and the 8.9, and like I said, we will provide the entire board as necessary, the spreadsheets and the breakdown there. I've communicated some of that with Brad Clark and we've discussed it, but we will provide all of it. It is very detailed information. So for one individual, you may have 7 or 8 documents to support each individual, and then each individual, there's probably 75, I think approximately, that make up that number. But yes, we are confident in that. What was the second part of your question, or did that answer all of your question?
Just, where does the 2.6 and, kind of factor in, and does the audit, is it just the 8.9 that you believe should be clawed back?
Well, we did not make, I don't think, a definitive statement in the audit that what you should recoup and what you should not. We felt like that's a decision you as a board are going to have to make, not us. We were trying to just report the facts of what we saw that should have been administrative that wasn't. So the 2016, in our opinion, that 2.6 should have been administrative, was not. It was documented and definitive in our opinion, and that's why that's part of the number. The 8.9 also, in our opinion, is very documented. We have it broken down by employee and the support behind that as to their positions and what they do. And so we're very confident in that. So those two numbers, yes. But I don't think the report itself is requiring or demanding a recoup or clawback from the board. That strictly is your decision. And we are just standing behind the facts of what we audited.
Can I ask one more question about the learning fund and kind of it being a private versus public bank account? Were you able to review, it's my understanding that there have been individual audits done of this every year and that it hasn't been something that has been flagged in the past. Is that what you saw as far as, I'm just wondering why this, after years of happening this way is just, coming to light as an issue.
Well, I'm not aware that the Learning Fund's ever been audited, so I'm not for sure about a response to that. As we understand it, it has never been audited. The internal auditor just recently did a contract, I believe, compliance audit of the Learning Fund or transactions from the Learning Fund, which was a public document presented in a board meeting with Community Strategies. But as far as the Learning Fund, and the evaluation of it being private or public and it being audited, I do not believe that has ever been done that I'm aware.
And is it fair to say if it has in fact ever been audited, we have 203,000 that went out of state from the Learning Fund that if it was audited, it was not caught?
Well, that's true. But I've never seen a report other than the recent internal auditor of the Learning Fund ever being accessed and audited by anyone. If it was out there, we were not provided it.
Let me just add to that the only auditing done for the Learning Fund basically amounted to the fact that the school received an invoice for payments to go to the Learning Fund, and then they paid the appropriate amount. So that's what the public auditor, CBEW, basically looks at. He says, hey, how much was the bill? Hey, the bill was $3 million. Did you send them $3 million? Yes. And that's basically where it stopped. How that $3 million was spent, he has no oversight of that either.
Is it fair to state that if we were in fact to audit the Learning Fund and compare invoices of student learning to the dollars that are sitting in that account, we know right now that we will come up $203,000 short because money has gone to California?
No, that wouldn't necessarily be fair because we don't know what has come back in. You know, that was kind of a roundabout circle. So the school in California had a line of credit with Community Strategies California because we saw that because they were subsequently invoiced for that. So we know the money went out of the Learning Fund, but we don't know if after the money was recuperated by Community Strategies California, whether they then sent that money back to the Learning Fund, for example, because we're not having access to these records. So we saw the outflow just based on the records from the bank account for the California EPIC. But since we don't have any access to anything else, we really can't say anything about whether the loop was ever closed or not.
Yeah, well, you've never been provided with documentation showing.
Because we have not been provided any documentation, exactly.
So these figures, though, are the results of a forensic audit. And we have these three areas where you, through that audit, have published information for us to respond to, and we have, as a state board, a duty to recoup those funds, and then there is the opportunity for the school or entities to respond to that.
Yes. That's where it stands with us.
All right, board members, I don't want to close discussion if you're not ready for that. Let's go ahead and I'll entertain a motion at this time to go into executive session. I would recommend that if there is a motion.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion, Ms. Hernandez, and is there a second?
Second.
And a second, Mr. Flanagan. All right, with that, we will move into executive session, board members. Thank you.
Shall we roll call?
Oh, yes, I'm so sorry.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moneys?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right. And with that, then we will move into executive session. Thank you for all of those who have joined us today. We will be back in a little bit. So thank you. All right. Before we begin, I want to give a quick review to ensure all of our board members are back. Okay. All right. Is there a motion to resume out of executive session?
So moved.
Second.
All right, motion and a second. Please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Kidding. Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, we are moving out from executive session, and I'd like the minutes and record to reflect those who joined in executive session. All of our board members, including counsel with Brad Clark, Lori Murphy, also Catherine Black and Phil Bacharach, Carolyn Thompson, and Representative Rhonda Baker, Representative Mark McBride as well. Have I missed anyone?
I believe that covers everybody.
All right. Okay, very good. Board members, is there a motion?
Yes, ma'am. I'd like to make a motion pursuant to the Oklahoma State Statute 70OS Section 18-118 that the State Board of Education makes a demand to Epic One-on-One Charter School and Epic Blended Charter School to return within 60 days of those schools' receipt of related work papers from the state auditor and inspector, $11,235,919, as provided in the audit conducted by the Oklahoma State Auditor and Inspector.
Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Miss Bradley or Mr. Flanagan?
It's Bill.
Mr. Flanagan. All right, thank you. And board members, is there any discussion or any questions? All right, please call the roll. Oh, you're on mute.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. And that motion carries. Thank you very much for all of those who presented today, as well as those who were with us as guests following. I know this is very important work, and I appreciate each one of our board members today for their work as well. Now, is there, and I've lost my agenda, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
And a second by Ms. Moniz, I believe. All right. Please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
And Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a great rest of the day, and I appreciate your service. Take care.